So first thing, so you're a self-taught artist. You've been drawing since you were like 5 or 6, right? So how did the tattooing start? Did you pick that up in prison? Was that something that you'd already been doing beforehand? How did tattooing kind of come into your artistic life?
I was always intrigued by tattoos. From, I guess, maybe seeing some old guys in the neighborhood with them. And then, like, the music I listened to since I was a kid, I listened to metal and punk and stuff like that. And a lot of them guys were tattooed. And then being, you know, hanging out in the streets, there wasn't a lot of kids with tattoos, but then kids started getting a little tattoos, and then I started tattooing my friends when I was probably like 15, 16 years old. Mm. Basically started with needle and thread, and probably tattooed half the neighborhood. And there's still some of my best friends since we were like 7 to this day, which we're all 49, 50 years old, that still got the tattoos that I hand poked on them, you know, in my basement, you know, when we were teenagers. And so I started like that. And then somebody would show up at my house with a homemade, like, prison machine, you know? Somebody's brother got out of prison or something and showed them how to do it. And, hey, look what I got. So then I tried them a couple times, and it was cool. It was harder. And then in 1996, it was when I was out on bond on this, the case that I ended up going to prison for. I was always drawing people to say, hey, I want a tattoo. Draw this for me, friends. And this shop, it was on the north side of Chicago. The owner was like, hey, who's drawing all this? And my brother got a tattoo, and he was like, my brother. And he was like, man, tell him to come holler at me one of these days. So I went there, and I got a tattoo by this girl that worked there, and talked to the owner, and the owner offered me an apprenticeship. So I was hyped up, and I told the guy, I'm like, man, I got this case pending. I didn't tell him it was a murder case, but I knew I didn't do it. So I'm like, this is ridiculous. I got arrested like a year later, you know, for, you know, some shit they don't even say I was at the scene of the crime. So I'm like, hey, I got this pending. Let me get this over with, and then, you know, I'll do the apprenticeship. He was like, cool, no problem. And, I ended up going to prison, so I never followed through on the apprenticeship. In prison, I really didn't do, in the county jail, I did a lot of hand-poked tattoos, you know, just basically lettering and names and stuff like that, symbols. And in prison, there was guys that were really good, but in a maximum prison, you're stuck in the cell all day. Right. So if you have a cellie, you can't, like, go in other people's cells. So if you have a cellie that don't want to get a tattoo and you got him for 3 years, you're not tattooing for 3 years, you know? So I did do some tattoos in there, but it was sporadic. It wasn't, you know, I wish I could have tattooed more, so I would have came out here and I would have been, you know, I would have been had more practice and experience, even though it's a lot different still. It's just a single needle to out here. There's, you know, just array of equipment, but it still would help. But so I did do some in there, but like I said, not as much as I would have liked to done. I would have liked to done a lot more.
Okay, cool, perfect. So back in 2012, you mentioned about how in a previous interview about how a shakedown team took all the art supplies you had in your cell. So I'm curious, is that part of what drove you to focus on working in black and gray so much, which is the bulk of the tattoo work you do these days, or were you kind of headed in that direction with the black and gray already?
Black and gray was always one of my main influence, probably the main influence, or they call it like Chicano style or prison style, or like it's all street stuff. And, you know, I consider myself a street kid. You know, I mean, I grew up in a middle class household. You know, whatever path I took, my parents have nothing to. There's no blame on them. It was all me, you know. And you know, like I said, maybe my mom wouldn't like hearing me say it, but I was a street kid. I've been all over the city. I've been in every neighborhood. So my influences were a lot of that, and even. Like I said, a lot of, like, the punk rock artwork and stuff. It was real basic and a lot of, like, you know, almost black and gray stuff. And so that was probably my in lettering. Lettering was, you know, my love from my graffiti days and since I was a kid and stuff. And but I started branching out. I had other buddies in prison that were doing oil paintings and acrylics and everything. And they knew, like, I was a really good artist, but I never dabbled in this. So then they started, pushing me. Come on, come on, come on. I know you can get it. I know you can get it. So I did. And, I started buying this stuff slowly but surely. And I got pretty good at it and never, like, mastered it or anything. But I loved it, you know. And I started doing a lot of oil painting. I mean, I had hundreds of acrylics and oil paints, and I literally had a couple $1,000 in equipment. So I was doing a lot more than just pencil portraits and pen pieces. You know, I was starting to get away from that because I've done that already for years. You know, I wanted to tackle a new medium. And it seemed like right when I was really getting good, then all of a sudden they came through for a major shakedown, which, you know, they do that shit all the time. And, sometimes there's an incident that triggers it. Sometimes they just do it. And they came through and they took everything from, like, everybody. Like, I guess this was the new, you know, like, hey, guess what? We're taking all this shit.
Right.
And we're stuck in a cell. It makes no freaking sense. Like, guys are sitting there. Like, I would put sometimes 10 hours a day into painting, into drawing. So this is now you take now, you know, so wouldn't you want guys to spend, you know, do something creative or with their time? And so it really sucked. I sent everything home. You know, they give you the option to send everything home. I was like, man, there's $1,000 worth of stuff there. I'm sending it, you know, an oil paint. One tube could cost you $70, $40. I don't think there's any less than 10.
Yeah.
You know, you can get acrylics for like $1 or something. But so, yeah, I sent all that stuff home and still got some of it at the house. And then from then on, I just, so what they did is then they started selling art supplies, their own, on the commissary. Cause we used to order them from a magazine from Dick Blick. So now they started selling them at the commissary, but it was like the worst crap ever, you know? So then I was like, you know, screw this. And I really started going into I was already doing portraits, but then I really just started kicking it in high gear into portraits. And I did thousands. I probably got 500 at the house right now. You know, I just go through magazines, every celebrity, any face that just caught me, you know, or was a new challenge. I would just, you know, I just boom, boom, boom. And I was knocking them out. I was knocking out portraits every day. Guys in there would ask me to, you know, want to pay me to do portraits for their grandma or whatever. I would do that once in a while, but I quit doing that because it was a pain in the ass. And I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I wanted to build my portfolio with stuff like that I was into,
right.
You know, because I always knew I had a life sentence, but I was always like, I'm getting out. I want to build my portfolio. I want to have, you know, all this stuff. Like, I want to just do better pieces and better pieces. And that's what I did. And I still got, like I said, I got hundreds at the house right now, you know.
Well, speaking of portraits, I wanted to ask you. You made at least a couple. I'm sure there are more, but there's two that I've seen of really heartbreaking self portraits that you did while you were in prison. And, you know, some people might think of prison as an obvious place to kind of take a good long look at yourself, but I think the opposite is often true for a lot of people. I think for a lot of folks, it's too difficult, you know, emotionally to even kind of go there and look at yourself in that kind of sustained way. So, can you describe kind of the emotional experience of self-portraiture in prison and doing these pieces? You know, I saw the one where you're tearing through the paper, and the one that your parents have up on the wall that you did that's like a color, like, I don't know if that's an oil painting or what, but what is it like to be sitting there and really have to be with yourself in a way to do self-portraiture like that?
First of all, self-portraits are hard as hell because you're like, it's you, you know? So you're like, no, my chin isn't that cool, or, you know, they're hard, but I did quite a few over the years, and the one that I called it I Am Edmond Dantes from the movie or the book, the book Count of Monte Cristo. Mm. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, where he crawled his way out. And so then years later, I seen, which I read that book and I loved it. And I seen V for Vendetta, and he was inspired by Edmond Dantès. And he was like, at the end, like when he was, they were like, who is that? And Natalie Portman's character was like, that is this, that is that, that is Edmond Dantès, you know. And then she's like, I am Edmond Dantès. And so that's where I got the inspiration from that. I seen in a book where someone had a self-portrait tearing through like a wall. And, you know, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And so, of course, I don't, I would see other art in tattoo magazines and stuff like that. And you get ideas and you use some stuff. You pick and, you know, choose different stuff. But I never want to copy someone's stuff identically. You know what I mean? Especially something that's, I think is going to be like a major piece for me. Because people be like, oh, yeah, I seen that. You copied it, you know. So it's different than the one that I seen, you know. But I knew I could knock it out. And I just did it like it was through the paper, you know. And I knew doing that one, I knew because my mom was running the Facebook page for me. And through the Wrongful Conviction Network and Prison Reform Network and all these other prisoner networks, like, I mean, we had thousands of people, followers on my page. And I knew that one was going to be a, it was going to tug on the heartstrings or whatever you call it, you know, that people would dig it. And and then I ended up sending it to this prisoner art competition, and I won first place off it. And that's, they got the original because that's what, that was part of the deal. You send it to them, then they get to keep the original and they could sell it or whatever. So somebody's got me crawling through the paper, hanging up in their house or in a drawer somewhere. I wish I had the original though. And but yeah, the self-portraits are, yeah, then I guess you see the oil painting one. And that's probably my best oil painting I ever did. And that one's in my mom's living room right now. Yeah, they're cool. I did a few other ones where I was like behind the bars. And that one won me like second place or first place too. I couldn't find a good copy of it when I was sending you the pictures. But that one was really good because it shows me behind the bars. And then there's like image, there's like a silhouette of a man and woman on a beach. And there's a silhouette, there's like a hand writing a letter. And there's like a, you know, a woman kind of sad, you know, just different stuff. And you know, so I drew, most of the self-portraits I drew, other than the oil painting, all the other ones, they were thrown in some type of collage or some type of like the one ripping out of the paper. You know, they were, I did them to be impactful to, you know, for people to see them and be like, oh my God, you know,
right.
You know, I wasn't like, oh, let me draw people in, like, you know, like to scam them. Like this is what I was feeling at the time. And, you know, different stuff that I dream about, freedom and going home and all this, and then putting me in there and, you know, but I knew those were, you know, emotional pieces and people were really, you know, it would grab people and, you know, stuff like that. And they're some of my favorite ones.
Yeah. No, I mean, even knowing you're out, I still, when I was looking at him, I was like, oh my God, this is so fucking sad. So you used to donate some of your artwork that you made inside to nonprofit auctions, like for like Pearl, Illinois and things like that. I remember Joe Dole telling me about that. And I know that flooding kind of the Chicagoland area with your work and with visual reminders of your absence in the forms of the billboards and all that stuff was a huge part of how you and your supporters eventually secured your exoneration. So could you describe how you built that free Matt Sopron kind of visual wave in the city and the ways that paid off?
Yeah. After going through years and years and years of the regular appeal process and getting denied and denied and denied, and like I said, I was an innocent man and I was just getting so frustrated, I seen different stories on 60 Minutes or CNN or whatever where these inmates in other states, they built up these grassroots movements and they used Facebook and they used this and they used that. And the billboard. I seen the guy in Alabama, you know, they used the billboard. I seen this guy in Missouri used Facebook with the holding up free Ryan Ferguson signs all over the country and other countries. So I was taking notes and building my game plan and to get my name out there, you know, to get the recognition out there and maybe get some media or get somebody important to follow me. I seen the West Memphis 3, and they were drawing in Johnny Depp and Marilyn Manson and Eddie Vedder and everybody. So I literally wrote all those guys. I sent those guys packages of artwork, you know, and wrote them letters. I sent letters to the tattoo artists that I really look up to, that reading their interviews, I could tell they were socially aware, and they seemed like really cool people, or people from the streets, or an artist that's like world famous tattoo artist that, you know, said he started tattooing in prison when he was young and stuff like that. I started writing to all these people. I started sending all these people my artwork. And then we started the whole free map movement, and I used my art every chance I got. I did like Ernie Banks, the Cub legend. He was like the first black Cub, one of the first black players. And they had when they unveiled his statue, I did a portrait of Ernie Banks from like 1956, and it's perfect freaking portrait. And we made like 1,000 copies on cardstock. And on the back, it had a sticker to see more of this artwork, go visit freemetsopron.com, blah, blah, blah. And I designed shirts, and we already had like black and white shirts, but I was like, if you're going to a Cubs game, you're going to see either blue or white, you know? So I'm like, we had like gold shirts, like say like Pittsburgh Steelers colors, gold shirts that said Free Mats Opron that I designed, and had like a fist and a raised fist. And so like my sister, 5, 6, 7 of my cousins, there was a bunch of them. They went there on Ernie Banks Day with like a couple thousand Ernie Banks prints, you know, that were, you could probably sell them for $50 a piece, and just literally passed them out, you know, out there during the whole Ernie Banks ceremony and stuff, you know. So I'm sure some of them, they got thrown in the freaking gutter, you know, but you know, somebody was drunk and sad on theirs or whatever, but I'm sure some people went home, and because we had a website with change.org, and that's what we were trying to draw people to the website. And it did. And then tattoo convention came to town, and I had a portrait of the main character from Sons of Anarchy, from Michonne, one of the main characters from Walking Dead, the main character from Breaking Bad. Like, these were the hot shows at the time. I had like 5 different of the hottest, you know, the big shows at the time. And I had like main character portraits. And same thing, we made a couple thousand copies and with the stickers on the back, and went to the tattoo conventions, and just, there's tables where people have like their business cards and stuff like that, and they put stacks of them on the tables, they passed them out, they walked around, they all wore the shirt, same thing. So yeah, every chance I got, you know, I was designing shirts. It was all my ideas. Like, I don't try to toot my horn. Like, people be like, you know, oh, your people did so much. Like, my people did. My people are the best. But like, I was in there just brainstorming, you know, and some things just like crashed and burned, and some stuff was, you know, worked pretty good. So, and I was like, hey, everything counts. I don't give a shit. Like, we're on it. We're on it. We're on it. We're going to be in their freaking face until I get out, you know, and it worked eventually. I mean, that definitely played a part, you know, because everybody talks about, people to this day will be like, oh, you're the guy with the billboard, or, oh, people have contacted me like, I got the Ernie Banks, you know, like, since I've been out, like a stranger, like that I've met, you know, at a concert or something, you know, it's crazy. So yeah, everything helped.
Yeah, and that's genius about the Cubs game. It's such a good idea. Let me see, where am I? Okay, so one of your main post-release goals was to open your own tattoo shop. But you said on the phone when we first talked that now that you're out here, you're at least for now, you're content to rent. And it was funny to me because it always seemed like everyone I knew when I was locked up was really fixated on ownership, you know, like nobody wanted to work for anybody else. Everybody was like, I got on my own construction company. I got on my, like whatever it was, like they had to own it. And that, you know, that always made perfect sense to me because, you know, you're coming from a place where you own nothing and you have nothing and you have no control. But, so can you just talk a little bit about what was appealing to you about the idea of owning your own shop and what's led you to kind of let go of that, at least for now, and say, you know, I'm good. I think like I can just rent for the time being and see how things go.
Yeah. Well, in prison, one thing, you do a lot of dreaming. You do a lot of big thinking. You know, you're not in reality, you know, especially when it comes to the street and being free. You're not in reality. So everybody's, you know, everybody's going to get out and date the superstar or, you know, own their own business and become a millionaire and all this, you know. And one, it's just not as easy. It's, you know, you have no clue what, you know, just coming out here 21 years later, you know, the world has changed. Everything changed. Like, you know, you're not in your 20s no more. I'm going to be freaking 50 years old. Like, so, you know, you got to take baby steps. There is no... you hit it on the head. Everybody in there is going to own everything. You know, everybody. I'm going to get my own car wash. I'm going to get my barber shop. I'm going to get this. And it's cool to have dreams and goals, but get out and get your feet wet and, you know, get established back in the world before you jump out there like that. I know guys that were exonerated that got $6 million and instantly bought a restaurant downtown, bought a car limo service, and he's got no money.
Right.
You know, 7 years later, because he didn't know what the hell he was doing.
Yeah.
You know? And I see working in a studio, you know, I apprenticed here first, and during the apprenticeship, they teach you a lot of how to run a shop and how to run a studio and, you know, and it's like sitting back and looking, it's like, okay, you know, it's a lot, there's a lot more to it. And then you see, I know other buddies that had shops and their shops folded. And I'm like, these guys are great artists. How did his shop fold? Because there's a lot more to it than just banging out tattoos, you know? And, you know, I got a blessing getting the apprenticeship here that, the owner here, Jose Perez Jr., he's literally one of the top black and gray artists in America. And he's, you know, he's been super cool with me. He knew my whole story through mutual acquaintances before I even got out. And he helped sell my lettering book at conventions and stuff before. A friend of my brother's used to work for him when I was away. And so I came out here, got a tattoo from him. And he hasn't had an apprenticeship in years. Mm. And I got the apprenticeship with him. And, you know, it's been super cool. You know, it's super cool. And I'm content. You know, I'm cool. You know, I don't even think about that. You know, I just want to... Another thing is being still new to the tattoo game, I wanted... My main focus is get better at getting every tattoo I want to do better. 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 And, you know, owning something or whatever, like, it's the last thing in my mind, you know, right now. You know, I think, because there are guys that own shops and studios, and they're trash, you know, compared to some of these other guys that run shops and studios. And then seeing just like what happened when COVID hit, you know, I mean, they closed these down for 90 days. I just watched an interview with this guy, Paul Booth, who's one of the most famous tattoo artists in the world. And he had six, seven other artists and six, seven employees in New York City. They shut it down and he closed up and now he's in New Jersey in a private studio tattooing by himself. And this is one of the most famous guys and probably one of the most expensive tattoo artists to get a tattoo from, who's literally tattooed stars and wrestlers and every freaking heavy metal band you could think of. And this guy couldn't keep afloat, you know? So it's a lot harder than people think. And then, you know, COVID's not like that's a normal thing, but who knows? Maybe it is a normal thing from now on, you know? So it's hard. It was hard here for, you know, for my boss here, and but you know, luckily they kept it going, and I'm still here, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. So one of your other goals when you were released was to build connections you'd already made with Three World artists, you know, people you'd first contacted while you were in prison. You mentioned this before about how you'd reached out to tattoo artists that you knew. So, I mean, you've said a little bit of this already, but, you know, if you, anything else you want to say about how you started to first reach out and make those connections, and also how those connections have kind of matured and borne fruit for you now that you're home?
Well, a lot of people didn't write back, that's for sure. But quite a few of the tattoo artists that I really looked up to, they did. And the one was a guy named Norm. He was a famous lettering tattoo artist, a famous graffiti artist, and he was opening shops in California and one in Hawaii. And I sent him a copy of my book and wrote him a letter. And I got out, and like 6 months after I got out, he passed away, which was, you know, was pretty sad. And like, especially the whole tattoo industry, the graffiti community, everybody was just like, you know, Norm. Everybody loved Norm. So that really sucked because, I mean, for one, he's gone, but I never got to meet him and never got to get tattooed by him because he responded to me and stuff, and it was really cool. And a few other artists, one is Tamara Santibanez in New York, and I just talked to her yesterday. As a matter of fact, she called me or texted me, and she does a lot of... She was a volunteer teaching art in Rikers Island. She's done projects with prison artwork where she was paying inmates were getting paid like $100 or whatever the case was, you know, for different pieces and stuff. And so from me reading all this about her, and she said she was influenced. They asked her influence in the magazine. She said prison art. She said lettering. She said graffiti. She said punk rock. I'm like, I'm into all. That's all my. That's me, you know.
Yeah.
And she seemed real socially aware, and you know, and was talking about the prison system and how jacked up it is. And I was like, oh, I gotta get at her. And she wrote me back, and we've been friends ever since, and super supportive, you know, all the way to the day I got out. And since I, like, that was the first FaceTime I ever did, was, you know, on Instagram. Like, she was texting me like, oh, this is like, I followed her page, and she was like, man, this and that, because she was new that following my court case and stuff. And and she hit it, you know, where it popped up, and I was like, what the hell do I do, you know? I'm like, hey, you know. So she's been really cool and inspiring and just down to earth person. And even since I've been out, she's done other projects with prisoners. So she'll contact me to say, hey, I'm going to do this or that. Do you know what, any of the guys will be interested? And I'm like, hell yeah, they will be, you know. So, you know, even if it's something to get paid for or something to not get paid for, I know these guys will, you know. I know the right guys that are good artists in there, and you know, that'll even, you know, donate to art or whatever, you know. And a few other guys that I got out, and there's this guy, a lettering guy in Chicago, who's one really good top lettering guy, famous lettering dude from the, you know, street background and everything, named Sir Twice. You know, I always looked at his stuff and followed his stuff, and especially when I got out, Instagram and everything. And one night I go on my Instagram and I seen, because I was following his page, you know, and I see he sends, I get a message from him, and I was just like, you know, because I'm always liking his stuff and comment. And he was like, damn, homie, he's like, I bought your book like 10 years ago, you know, or whatever, when you were in prison. I was like, he's like, man, I'm so glad to see you're out, and da da da, you know. I was like, damn. I'm like, this dude who I look at is like, you know, one of the best. He bought my book 10, you know, years ago or whatever. And so that was really cool. And since then, I met him at conventions, and super cool dude. And, you know, he's like, we got to hook up. And, you know, this and that. And, you know, so that's just the stuff just opens doors. And, and then a lot of the other, there's like a community almost of a lot of the lettering guys were that are really cool friends. And so some of the guys that he messes with, they're from California and stuff. They tattooed, like, I got this from this guy, Flox, this from this guy named Weddo. They're kind of, they're pretty much famous lettering dudes, you know, really good dudes, really good artists, same type of backgrounds, pretty much how they grew up, you know, like me. And everybody's been cool. Mm-hmm. Everybody I've met at the conventions, everybody, and these are guys, like I said, I look up to these guys. They could be like, who's this guy? Oh, he just started tattooing, whatever. Nah, they don't. They look at their, you know, what's up, homie, this and that, you know, kick it with me when we're tattooing, you know, open book, talk about whatever, you know, hit each other up on Instagram here and there, just really good dudes. And so, yeah, that's, and the crazy thing is, just a couple weeks ago, Sir Twice was in Vegas tattooing, and he was at Norm's brother's shop. And Norm's brother has a bunch of Norm's old stuff. So he had, like, Norm had a collection of books and stuff. And Twice was going through the books, and he found my lettering book. And he opened it up, and my letter, like, it's 2-3-page letter, was in there.
Oh, wow.
And so he was filming it, and he was like, damn, homie, look. And he sent me the video, and it was, like, 1 in the morning. And I was like, I'm like, that's my fucking writing. And I'm like, and then I seen the first page and it said Norm, you know, where I wrote. And I was like, damn. I was like, and right there, I was like, damn, you know, okay. I sent him the book and the letter. He could have threw the letter out, you know, but that showed how much of a real dude this was, you know. He kept my letter, you know, which, and that meant a lot to me. And I was like, damn, man, that I never got to meet the guy, but it, you know, Twice seeing this and sent it to me, it was a trip. It was a big time trip. So yeah, a lot of the people that I have made contact with, I'm still in contact with them, and through them I've met more tattoo artists, more graffiti artists, and, you know, just starting to network more, you know, meeting guys in bands, like bands that I looked up to. Now it's like I've met them. I've been backstage hanging out with these guys. They bring, you know, they give me free stuff. They know my story. They know, you know, they know I'm a tattoo artist. They know I'm an artist. They know street kid listening to hardcore, listening to punk growing up. And it's like I come walking into the venues and one of them sees me, come on, takes me right backstage. And, you know, it's been a whirlwind. It's been really cool. You know, I'm living life to the fullest. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's, like you said, you never know where a thread's going to lead. That's great that it's all paying out that way. So one of your favorite artistic subjects is women, right?
Yeah.
And normally when I hear that a guy who's locked up or has been locked up for a long time likes to do portraits of women, it's like, oh shit, like here we go. Like, because, you know, it's so much. I mean, we're not talking, like, people that don't know, like, we're not talking pinup style. We're talking, like, the most graphic depiction of women you can possibly imagine for a lot of these guys, because they're, like, selling it as porn to guys around the cellar block or whatever. So I get that, like, that's what's common in terms of prison artwork, but obviously, like, that you're specifically not doing that.
Yeah.
So talk about what's fulfilling and meaningful to you about how you choose to draw women, and the portraiture you do around kind of women in the female form, and why it's such a favorite subject for you.
Well, I haven't really drawn too many women since I got out, but in there, I definitely was my portraits. I drew, probably 80% of my portraits were of women, and some of them were just like celebrities that I, you know, that I thought were, you know, hot. My, you know, everyone's got their top celebrity lists. So yeah, I drew plenty of Selma Hayek's and J-Lo's and, you know, Jennifer Aniston's and the like. And then sometimes just some of these, you know, big booty model chicks, you know, what, you know, from the different magazines that, you know, but sometimes it was just like, a face would just catch me from like a Revlon ad that was in a Time magazine or something, or, you know, and, you know, just the look, or I just like the one side of her face. And I would rip that picture out and I would save it for when I would do like one of these collages, you know, 'cause I, you know, especially be influenced by a lot of prison art and Chicano art. There's a lot of you do a lot of collages. So I would take a lot of these pictures of just random, you know, freaking perfume ads or whatever. And if the face caught my attention, or just the eye or the lips, whatever, I'd rip them out, and I had folders just saved with all kinds of stuff that I liked, and then I would use them for, you know, later on for references and stuff. And I did a lot of Day of Dead Girls, a lot of the girls with the clown makeup, you know, the Chicano style clown makeup. Or I did ones like I drew a lot of different like punk rock girls. Like I'll take a girl and I'll throw a mohawk on her and tat her all up. And this was some supermodel in a lingerie ad, you know, and you know, just create my own, you know, my own version of this woman, or, you know, whatever I was feeling at the time, you know. Yeah, I never drew there's quite a few guys that do draw that stuff, like the more like sex related and raunchy shit. I never really drew any of that, you know. I tried to draw them. I tried to draw them as beautiful as they can be, and or classy or elegant, or the beauty that I was into. It could have been the chick with the clown makeup on, or a chick with the, you know, Free Matt tattooed across her throat with a, you know, with teardrops, and, you know, and make her look like a punk rocker, or make her look like a, you know, a little chola girl from the neighborhood or something, you know, and, you know, baggy pants and a wife beater on with, you know, tattooed all on her chest, lettering and stuff like that. And, you know, I love doing that and just creating. You know, I did the straight up portraits, celebrities, stuff like that. But I also love creating and molding my own versions. And I got quite a few of them. I got lots of them, actually. And it was really cool. And if you're gonna sit there and draw something and look at it all day, you might as well, you know, you can, you might as well look at a beautiful face, and, you know, making this beautiful face just pop, you know, as the hours go on, it's coming to life, and it's popping, and you're like, oh yeah, you know, I nailed it, you know. You know, and some guy three cells down's like, hey, can you draw my girl, after he sees that one, and I'm like, I'm busy, you know. But, so yeah, you know, plus being just cut off from, you're surrounded by nothing but dudes, yeah, for freaking years and years and years and years and years. It's like, it's almost like an outlet, you know, and not on some creep shit. It was, you know, it's just appreciating the beauty of a woman and just creating a woman, you know, drawing her. And so I think that, you know, that's definitely one of the main things.
Yeah.
So since coming home, I know you've done a number of these kind of large scale paintings, you know, mural stuff for bars and restaurants. And maybe I'm being too sappy about this, but it really does feel meaningful to me that you've had these opportunities to literally like make your mark on this community through these commissions, after, you know, being ripped away from the community for so many years. So can you just talk about that, about this kind of ironic, amazing thing of you getting to kind of make these kind of permanent marks on kind of this community that you were taken away from for so long?
You know, especially being a graffiti artist growing up and being arrested for graffiti quite a few times and going through hell with graffiti, either by people chasing you or my parents, you know, finding my stash, or, you know, or having to bail me out. You know, it was like, you know, they hated it. To this day, if I mention stuff, they just give me a dirty look. But at the same time, it really influenced me in my art and in my life. And, you know, and I'll never change any of that, as far as the graffiti side, you know. And to this day, I love it. To this day, if I'm driving on expressway, I'm rubbernecking. I'm seeing, like, these kids nowadays are just, they're blowing it up compared to, you know, the 80s and the 90s when I was doing it. And So to get out, I got out, and one of my old graffiti partners, he passed away, and he was one of my best friends. And his little brother was, like, young at the time. So when I got out, somebody introduced me to him, and now he's a really good graffiti artist. But he also does a lot of murals. He does canvases. He does stuff. So he hit me up one time and said, hey, we're going to do this warehouse in Waukegan. And it was like a big, giant warehouse. It was empty. They turned it into like a paintball place and or the rubber pellet airsoft guns or whatever. So they have like cars and buses and just structures. And it was graffitied already, but they let graffiti artists go there because it's supposed to be like urban warfare type, you know. So that was the first time I picked up a spray paint can in 25 years or whatever. And it was super cool. It was just like... It was just like a high. It was just like, ah. And I did a big piece. I forgot to send it to you, too. But it said Vindicated. Yeah. And it's kind of pretty much kind of like this one. But the tattoo on my arm. But it was really cool. And then I did a piece for my boy who passed away. And then from there, of... old friend of my brother's who was part owner of a bar in the West Loop, he hit me up and was like, hey, I want to do some, me and my partners, we want some paintings on the walls, like, you know, like a lot of these other joints got. So I went down there and met with them, and they told me what they wanted, and I started doing this stuff. It was called the Wise Owl. I think I sent you the owl painting. Yeah. So I did the owl painting. I did a few other things. It was really cool. And did that. And then about 6 months later, they hit me up and they said, hey, we'd like to, now they were doing the big patio out there. So they wanted the whole outside graffitied, but with all the Chicago themed stuff. And so I grabbed my buddy whose brother passed away and a couple other guys. And like he grabbed a guy, I grabbed a guy, and we did this whole side of this wall. It was all like, we had Chris Farley and Jordan and Cubs, Bulls, Chance the Rapper, like all Chicago themed, Skyline, different stuff. It was really cool. So that was the first like big project. And then from there, posting that, we all posted it on different social medias, and other businesses hit us up, and we did a few other businesses. And then the best one yet was, one of the owners there was part owner of this place in Joliet where they have concerts called The Forge. And I've been there for concerts and everything. And they wanted this room painted with all these dead icons of the music industry. And so it was three of us. And one of them was my co-defendant that got out, Nick Morphin. And we went there and that piece was, it's awesome. It's this long, narrow room, and there's like probably 20-something, 5 foot tall heads or figures of, you know, everybody from Aaliyah to Biggie, Tupac, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, you know, John Lennon, you know, Freddie Mercury, you know, just all different genres of music that have passed away. It was all people that passed away like in their 20s, though. There's no, like, somebody who died when they were old or whatever. But it's really cool room. And we rocked it. The three of us blew that sucker out the park. And from then on, you know, we got a couple more gigs off of that, you know. And it's really cool. It's, you know, I mean, the money's always pretty good. But it's like, it's fun, you know, it's fun. It's, you're hanging out with your buddies and you're just creating like these big ass pieces, you know, and it's, I've been to concerts afterward where I'll be in there and I'll go up to the bar and some out down the way, someone will say to the bartender, like, oh my God, this room is fucking amazing. Da, da, da. And the bartender will be like, that's the guy who painted it right there. And they'll be like, what? And they'll be like, well, you painted this? I'm like, yeah, me and my guys. And they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, well, I do this. And I'm a tattoo artist. And they're like, you got a card? And I give them one of my cards. And, you know, it's just, so it's really cool. Or just seeing people taking pictures in front of our work, you know, it's really cool. And like I said, I'm big into concerts, into music, into metal and punk hardcore scene. And to see that this place, one of the main places for the shows, you know, is I decorated it, you know, I painted it, and everybody loves it, you know, it's really cool. So yeah, it's I think I got something else lined up pretty soon, but yeah, I'm always going to be down for that. I tell people, because I'm getting the graffiti, but it's legal, you know? Yeah. So I get to do what I love, and I don't have to worry about getting chased or getting arrested. And, yeah, I don't ever see myself, you know, I'm going to have to be really old with arthritis in my hands before I stop, before I could stop doing something like that. I won't pass that stuff up for sure.
Cool. All right. Well, those are my only questions. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about or touch on that we didn't get to?
Let me think. I can think of. Since I've been out, I've designed some shirts. You know, other stuff I've done, like with my art, I've designed shirts. I was contacted by Northwestern Center for Wrongful Conviction. Mm-hmm. This was before COVID sometime, and they were like, hey, we're having this event, and we want exonerees that are doing their own business type stuff. Maybe this guy's doing bakery or whatever, this, that, selling a book or whatever. And they're like, you're an artist. Would you be, you know, you could bring some of your art, put on display, you could sell it, whatever. So I was like, yeah, cool. You know, because I got hundreds of pieces, you know. And it's hard to, like, which ones do I want to sell, you know, because I kind of, like, have dreams of when I have my own house with a big man cave with all my stuff hanging up. But so I picked a bunch of stuff out, and then I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm going to make some shirts. So I did. I made, you know, because, like, lettering is one of my main thing specialties that I love. And so I made Vindicated shirts, and I made another one, Justice for the Wrongfully Convicted. And I did another one that has, like, a real heart, and it has, like, a ribbon going through it. It's a Chicago. And then going down is, like, the Chicago flag. And brought them there and sold, you know, sold most of them out. Sold a bunch of more online, stuff like that. And I'm definitely going to make another shirt soon. I just, like, I'm a procrastinator. And that's another thing, too, guys talk about. I'm going to sell shirts. I'm going to sell this. It's, again, if you have an event like that, that's one thing. If you don't, it's hard as hell to move stuff. And but I got a Chicago shirt in mind that I want to hook up. That you know, it's something that I'm going to do it for the fun of it, not so much to try to make money off it. And so if I order 200 of them and I don't sell them for a couple of years, it's not a big deal, you know. And let's see what else. Oh, I've as far as art wise, since I've been out, I've donated art to at least about 4 or 5 times to different to Parole Illinois, to Innocent Demand Justice, to these different groups that are, you know, trying to make a change or help guys out in prison or bring awareness to prison reform or bogus sentencing or wrongfully convicted. And that's another thing. I don't ever see myself. I don't ever see myself distancing myself from that community. Right. You know, that's part of my life. And, you know, my family was involved in that, and going to court, going, doing all this stuff and running around. And now that I'm out here, that's my job. Like, even a couple of weeks ago, they exonerated 7 guys in one day. And I was right there at the press conference, like, standing right there in the front, and I had my Justice for the Wrongfully Convicted shirt on. And I talked to Joe a couple of days later. Joe called from Stateville, and he's like, oh, we seen you and this and this and that. And we seen, you know, because there was like 25 exonerees there, you know. Yeah. And he was telling me, he's like, you know, it's hard. You know, a lot of guys don't admit shit like this because they're in prison or whatever, you know. But Joe was like, dude, he's like, you don't know how much it means for us to see you guys. Because I told him there was a few other guys that he knows that weren't on camera. He's like, man, get them fuckers on camera. He's like, dude, you don't know how much it means. He's like, this place buzzed for like 2 days. Because here's 25 guys that we all did time with for 20 years or more. And here they all are together, backing some other guys coming home. He's like, dude, that, he's like, man, keep that shit going. Keep that shit going and get them other assholes involved, because that's what's keeping us going. That's what's keeping us to have faith and you know, keep pushing. And I was like, hell yeah, dude. I was like, you know, I told you I'm in this till, again, I'll be doing that till I'm an old man, you know. That's why people say, oh, you're going to move out to here, there, there. I'm like, I'm not moving anywhere, you know. Maybe after, down the line, maybe I have a Florida home for the winter or something like that. But I'm born and raised Chicago. I'll be in the Chicagoland area till I die, for sure.